So this is Torah versus heresy. It's called Torah Saves You from Two Heretics. And it's Mishlei Perek Beis, Psukim Yud to Chav Beis. Okay, we're going to finish the Perek. And this is where we really get introduced to the two types of heretics that are going to play a key role in the coming chapters. After he's going to, is we interplay between Chachma and these two heretics. They're the male and the female types. The Mishnah is going to here present the male heretic, and then he's going to present the female heretic. Okay, and the what I'm going to do this time, instead of reading all the psukim, I'm going to break up what we're going to do tonight into three separate sections. Because all three sections basically revolve around the Pasuk Yud Beis. Everything goes back to Pasuk Yud Beis, Lahatzilcha, or really Yud to the beginning of Yud Beis. It sets up the three separate sections. They're all, Rashi says, all of them go back to that one Pasuk. Okay, so I'm just going to read, we'll do it in three separate sections. Hopefully the timing of the whole thing works out. Okay. So let's start from Pasuk. The first section is Pasuk Yud to Tezvav. Okay, but like I said, the first two three psukim in a certain sense are universal, in the sense that they apply, they're in a sense the introduction to all three sections. So you kind of have to like apply them over and over and over. Okay. But Pasuk Yud, let's read that. So it's Kisavo Chachma Bilibecha. So this is what we did last time was Shlomo's introduction to why Chachma is so great. Okay, and he's going to go into it in more depth later, but he was trying to get you to appreciate the value of wisdom and Torah and to use kind of external arguments why it's so good and so valuable and to get you to appreciate it. That was what we did last time. Now, once you do that, kisavo chachma bilibecha, when wisdom enters into your heart, vidas lenafshecha yinam, and knowledge becomes something pleasant and enjoyable for you, then mizima tishmor lecha tivuna sincereka. So then mizima is the Torah, right? Rashi ha Torah tishmor lecha. So mizima is another word for the Torah. Rashi in the beginning of Mishlei, Perek Aleph Pasuk Dalet, right? Is the pasuk said Loses Lipsoim Arma Lenar Das Umezima. So Rashi the Mezima is Machsheves Eitza. So it's like intelligent strategies. Okay. So intelligent strategies is another word for the Torah. It was used multiple times throughout Mishlei. Mezima means the Torah. It's basically like an idea of a good strategy. Okay. So the Torah, which is a good strategy on how to deal with dangers and problems, when it enters your heart and it becomes pleasant and valuable and you understand it's the value of Torah, then the Torah will protect you and understanding will Torah will guard you and understanding will protect you. Okay. So once you internalize the value of wisdom and the value of Chachma and Torah and why it's good, and you let it become part of you, then it's going to protect you. Okay. Now, what is it going to protect you from? Okay. Now, these are the psukim. Lahatzilcha miderech ra, meish medaber tapuchos. So it's going to save you from the bad path, from the man who speaks duplicitously. Now, tapuchos is like he turns things on their heads. He tricks. He's a trickster. He distorts the truth. Medaber tapuchos, mahapich, right? So Rashi says, ish medaber tapuchos, him haminim hamesisin es Yisrael, lavodazara, umahapchen es atorah lara. So it's the heretics who seduce the Jew to go to their religion, and they mahapchen es atorah lara, and they turn the Torah into something bad. They make the Torah into something evil. Okay. Ha'ozvim archos yosher. So these people, these minim, they abandon the good straight path. La lechaz v'daki choshech. they abandon a good path, these minim, in order to walk in a dark dark side. Hasmechem lasos ra, they're happy to do evil. Yagilu bisapuchos ra, they rejoice in their evil distortions. Asher archosim ikshim, their ways are bent, crooked. Unilozim bimagalosam, and their paths are twisted. Okay, that's the first section. That's the description of the male heretics, and the Torah protects you from them. So first, we're going to analyze the masculine form of the minim of the heretics, because again, the minim take two forms: the masculine and the feminine form. Okay, I would say, and I don't want to say one's primary. They both are prominent in Mishlei, the masculine and the feminine heretic. Maybe the feminine version is a little bit more prominent, the Isha Zara, but whatever, maybe. But they're both come up. So let's analyze the masculine heretic and how it's describing him. And then once we understand that, then we'll try to analyze how does the Torah and Chachma protect you from these people. Okay. So the first thing is the masculine version of the heretic, the Ish Medaber Tepuchos. He's characterized as a pseudo-intellectual person. Okay, where they use arguments that to the untrained person are good rational arguments, and they seem on the surface to really break down the Torah and to show you why the Torah is really distorted, the Torah is twisted, the Torah is unethical, it has problems, it has genocide the Torah, and it's slavery, and it's sexist to women, and the Bible critics, they'll bring down questions of why does it repeat itself, and the Torah contradicts itself, and it's multiple editors, and they're going to use all kinds of pseudo-intellectual arguments that to the Nar and the Pesi, who doesn't really understand how to see through these arguments. So it really seems like these are good arguments, and they really break down the Torah, and they for somebody who somebody who listens to these guys, if you start reading their books and you listen to their words and people who go to I would say college campuses, secular colleges, they come into contact with these people. And they don't really know how to respond to them. And it seems like, the kid grows up and he says, I never thought of it that way. I never realized how bad the Torah was, and it's got all these problems. And he doesn't really understand how to answer them. So that's these guys. That's the Ish Medaber Tepuchos. That these people are basically, that's like the I would say the world of academia really is I would think the modern equivalent of the Ish Medaber Tepuchos. It's an intellectual field. I would say I don't know for sure, but I would think it's Bible critics, from what seems to me, it's probably dominated by men to some degree. I don't know if I would think it's the majority in the world of academia. Probably it's pervasive, and that's why it's probably the fact that characterizing it as the male pseudo-intellectual who tries to use these distortive arguments that are not really genuine, they're sophistry, and they really distort the truth. That's really these guys. Okay, and their goal is really to make you cause you to abandon the Torah by convincing you that the Torah is really a bad thing. The Torah is really false, it's really a bad thing, and they're gonna do it through intellectual arguments. Okay. Now these people, they abandon a good path in life, right? And to some degree, just to pick on the Bible critics a little bit, they spend their entire life Right? It's the crazy life that they do. Their entire life is devoted to hours and hours of some book that they hold is totally fake. It's a twisted life that they do. Their entire life is engaged in, you know, in learning and studying this book, which they hold is a man-made book, a fabricated book. You know, and they work at all these pshatim, right? These speculated pshatim. So, you know, a person doesn't understand. You think they're really working hard. They're really publishing, you know, these papers and whatever it is. But it's really just really speculation and poor speculation at that. But you have to be able to see through it, you know. But it's just they lead twisted, corrupt lives. And what are they doing with their lives? They're breaking down something which they hold as some fake fabricated thing. And they are, I think Pasuk Yadalat is a critical Pasuk here, is what characterizes them is that Smeichen Lasos Ra, Yagilu B'Tapukos Ra, they act like they love what they're doing. They're studying this fake man-made text, you know what I mean? And in order to break down the Jews, break down the Bible, breaking down the Christians, they're breaking down everybody, all religions, they're attacking religions, and they're so happy and enthusiastic about what they're doing, and they love it, and they're so excited. Yagilu b'tapukos ra, they get so much enjoyment about twisting and distorting the Torah in order to make it into something other than it is, and to show how the Torah is really bad. And this is exactly what their thrill in life is. Their entire life is devoted to this thing, and they act like they're happy, the happiest people in the world. Like the whole world of academia creates this impression of this great intellectual paradise of all these people who are publishing papers and journals, and they're having degrees and PhDs, and they have these conferences and this whole thing. It's like they presented this amazing way of life, and this is really the peak of intellectual, you know, universities and college campuses and all this stuff. They create this facade, this image that this is where it is, this is where ideas are, and this is really honesty, you know. But it's the most, if when you dig deep into the world of academia, you see it's like the most corrupt, distorted system that they've created, where basically all these people, you know, they're all they're really motivated by is their career. They destroy each other. Their journals are basically they pretend that they're pursuing truth, but in reality, these journals are just gatekeepers who just, in every area of academia, the whole system is a corrupt system where basically it never allows thought that's outside of the mainstream to even get published. If you're publishing something that seriously undermines the mainstream thing, the journal, they won't even publish you. You know what I mean? Like if somebody tries to publish in one of these Bible critics journals, something or an Orthodox person tries to publish some way to resolve one of these problems, they won't even publish it because it comes from a religious person. And it's not just, you know, the Bible critics journals, the whole world of academia in let's say particle physics. You know, if somebody tries to publish something against the mainstream string theory, you know, attacking it or whatever it is, you don't get published. In economics, you publish something against the idea of the Federal Reserve and monetary policy, they're not going to publish that. In climate journals, if you publish something that's against the theory that man is the primary cause of, you know, climate changing, global warming, whatever it is, and argue maybe there's some other cause that's also important, you're never going to get published, you know. So you have basically it's this world that presents itself as pursuing truth and honesty, and to the outside observer, it looks like these people are really engaged in a serious thing and they love what they're doing. But really, when you dig deep into it, it's a very corrupt system that doesn't really lend itself to pursuing the truth. It just creates this facade. And that image that they present to the world, that they're very happy in what they do and they think that what they have is the greatest thing, that's something that fools the observer. And it's reasonable that an untrained observer would be fooled by it, because most people use a heuristic, a very simple, a heuristic is like a rule of thumb or some sort of simple method that in general, if you want to study a group of people and you want to know whether it's a good way of life or a bad way of life, well, look at them. If they look like they're having a good time, then it's probably a good way of life. And it looks like if they're having a miserable time, then that's a bad way of life. So they purposely create this image of themselves as being happy people, And that fools people into thinking that this is really a good way of life, and they're really getting some sort of intellectual satisfaction. It's really a good existence. But the reality is that it's just a self, it's a self-deceptive thing, that they've become so distorted and twisted that they actually get enjoyment out of being engaged in the deepest corruption of taking something that's true and good, like Torah, and presenting it as this corrupt system, an awful system that's so unethical. You know, the greatest ethical work ever created, which transformed ethics of society for thousands of years and is still relevant today and light years ahead of any of the things that they do, their nonsense morality, like the modern morality. And the Torah is still so far advanced, and they twist it and show you the Torah is so corrupt. Do you know what I mean? That's their they get their kicks from, but they present themselves as being happy, and that tricks people. What tricks people is two things: the intellectual facade and the fact that they present themselves as being very happy and satisfied in what they do. And for the untrained observer and the nar and the pesi, that's very dangerous. That's a very dangerous problem, that that he's unable to see what exactly about their way of life is so bad and so corrupt. It requires chachma, it requires wisdom and knowledge to be able to see their arguments and to take them apart and to see why they're false. And you have to be able to realize that a person pretends to be happy. It's not just these guys, it's just, you know, not just the Ish Medaber Tapuchos who pretends to be happy. Many people who are not happy pretend to be happy. And it's a heuristic that the untrained person uses by looking at people. Are they happy? That must be a good way of life. And they don't really realize that, you know, self-reported happiness is not really a very good method of determining whether people are happy. It's not really a good method of determining should I live that kind of a life. Because people very often lie to themselves. They're not just lying to others, they lie to themselves. They tell themselves that they're happy, even people who live bad lives are really, you know, not really leading. They're really leading bad, miserable lives. But they tell themselves that they're happy consciously. They say we're happy people, but they're miserable, and they have so much conflict and stress and anxiety in their life, and their pettiness and jealousy, all these problems. But they make it seem they're very bent on portraying to the world the image that their life is amazing and life is great. I would say that. It's kind of come to the. I just learned about this last week with the social media. Apparently, that there's these like people on Instagram or you know or whatever, Facebook, whatever it is, that when they present pictures of themselves, they have like these filters that make them look different than in real life. And like you know, people that I wasn't aware of. I was aware that people, you know, if you know, I'm sure everybody's on these chats or whatever it is. You just see pictures of people's lives. People's lives look amazing. Everybody's always so happy with their kids. You know what I mean? Their kids are always smiling because they only present, people present a distorted image of their life to the world. And they always want everybody to be envious. People have this sick need to make everybody be envious of them. And they present themselves as being living great lives. And that's what the Ish Medaber Tepuchos are, these minim. They really, their goal is to break down the Torah and to destroy Jews and to pick off Jews. And as soon as Jews go into their realm at a college and the college universities and these intellectual bastions of corruption, and as soon as they find a Jew, they pounce on them. They try to destroy them, you know. And part of the way they do it is that their image to this young, you know, inexperienced, ignorant Jew is that this is the greatest life and this is real chachma. This academia is the real great thing. And that's what really tricks the person. And it's really the only way to really be protected by that is if you internalize chachma and you internalize Torah and you're not lazy about it. And you're able to, when you read their arguments, you're able to say, you know what, that's a stupid question. That's not a great question in the Torah. You know, why does it say Maaser over here, Maaser over there? You know what I mean? Well, there's such a thing as Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. Do you know? Like, yeah, I forgot. There's so many of these silly questions that Chazal already took up, and there's good and better answers, much better answers than their nonsense that they do. But if you don't know the Torah and you don't know Chachma, it's very hard to break these people down. And I would say most people, I shouldn't say most, a lot, maybe most people who get who go to them are fooled and tricked, or who think that. Their arguments are really good, and that the fact that they're happy in doing evil is really something that fools people into thinking that it must be good, the fact that they're so happy about that.
Where is it?
That's, I think, the core elements of this at this point. Before I go further on, is there any questions, any comments on this on this on this this?
Right there.
Yes, go ahead.
Rashi seems to read something else, or more at least, not else, into tafuchos, tafuchos, right? That they're mahavchen as a Torah l'ra.
Right.
And I thought that was part of the ultimate goal, is going to be sort of to take Rashi's hand and sort of let him, what, you know, how he handles this. I mean, how does this fit into Rashi, I guess?
Well, I mean, that was a key essence of, you know, element of what I was saying, is that they try to take the Torah, which is a good book, which is wisdom, and they twist it and they turn it and they try to show why the Torah is really this bad, unethical system, which harms people, is unethical, and genocide and slavery, and it's bad to women, and they take something which is true and they say the Torah is really false and was stitched together, and it's they take the Torah, which is good, and they basically paint it as an evil thing. Mahapchas Torah Ra means if you want to understand what the Torah is, you read their version of the Torah, you're like, this is an awful book, this is terrible, it really is terrible. You know what I mean? Their version of the Torah, how they present it to people, is they present it like this awful thing. They cherry pick certain aspects of it and without giving you context, and they make it seem like it's a bad thing. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, I was saying for you know, a nice girl comes to the Torah and, like, and wants to see, is it, what is the Torah about? And you go to these people, you know, this Torah is this awful system. It just completely mistreats women. I mean, it's awful to them. It's double standard and all these things. And if a girl doesn't have a chachma, doesn't understand the Torah, she's not going to be able to understand the rationale behind the Torah and the deep chachma in the Torah and why that really is a good thing, why it gives women the best way of life, and how it creates a harmonious society, and it creates the berachas habayis, and the fact that there's different roles in society, and how that's good for women as well as for men and for kids and for society as a whole, and everybody has a better life. And they basically take the Torah and they twist it. They purposely present it in a way where Torah is bad and is harmful, because they're trying to break down religion. They're trying to break the Jew away from the Torah, and that's their goal. And their goal is not honesty. They're not honest investigators trying to see what the Torah is. They're coming with an agenda. They have an assumption the Torah is false, the Torah is lies, the Torah is made by man, and they're trying to find things to justify their agenda. Do you know what I mean? They're not honest investigators, and they're specifically, they will distort the Torah. They will not be honest. They will not quote things that go against what they're saying, questions on their approach. And they're mahapchen as a Torah, l'ra. They're trying to turn the Torah into something evil. So yeah, I mean, that is what Rashi's saying. That's goofy what Rashi's saying. I'm not sure you understand the question. Why would you say that Rashi's saying something different than that?
The tafuchos part just sounds like, you know, or maybe it's just a question of pshat and just reading more into it. But I thought when you originally explaining the pasuk, you were thinking that the duplicity is in the sense that they're misrepresenting their own satisfaction in order to draw you in and try, and they're mispainting. On the flip
that's
side, they're also
Yudal.
Misrepresenting the.
Yeah, that's pasuk Yudal. Pasuk Yudal has smechem lasos ra, the yagilu betapuchos ra. That's pasuk Yudal. That is presenting them as happy and joyous, but just the basic shot of who they are—they're people that distort the Torah. Do you know that? Doesn't mean there's two elements. One is that they're distorting the Torah, presenting it in a false light, not being honest about its presentation through cherry picking, leaving out the context of things, specifically only doing things that are against modern intuitions of morality, things like that. Specifically trying to present the Torah in a bad way, and then two is their own life, their own existence. They make it seem like they have the greatest existence. They have the most amazing existence of leading this wonderful world of academia, of publishing paper after paper about the Torah and speculation after speculation. So there's two elements. One is the distortion of the Torah, and the other is the distortion and misrepresentation of their own existence, their own way of life. That's like the two elements that are here. That trick the person who can't see through their nonsense. Okay, good. I don't like these guys, by the way. You should. I don't know if it comes across or not, but I don't like them very much. Okay. Okay. Okay, I just had one other point. It's just this idea. Okay, whatever. All right, one other point. It's not about these guys. Just this idea that that the world of academia presents itself as this amazing bastion of liberal intellectualism and honest investigation when nothing could be further from the truth. Okay, is it's something that exists. It's a phenomenon that exists in many areas of society today. I would say there's the Hollywood illusion, where like, you know, you go to LA, people there, they think that that is the center of the universe and this is the greatest place to live. They can't understand why anybody wouldn't want to live there. Do you know what I mean? It's this bubble of Hollywood and LA and entertainment, and it's just they feel like they really are the center of the universe and it's the greatest existence. When really, to somebody who's trained and can investigate, it's the most miserable place. Everybody's jealous of everybody else. They're petty. They're mean to each other. You know, it's like the worst. It's really the, like, I don't want to, you know, it's terrible. It's a terrible place. But they present this illusion of the glamour and the glitz, like it's this amazing thing. And I would say Wall Street is the same thing. In New York, Wall Street, this business, it's that this is the place to be. This is the center of money and taivas and excitement and things like this, that also Wall Street creates is also this bubble. And I would say Washington also. If you go down to Washington, you like everybody there, just like this place consumed with power and prestige and who you know and connections and things like this. It's the same kind of idea. There's these bubbles of societies and everybody who's within that bubble always believes this is the greatest place to exist. It's the center of reality. And they don't understand anybody who they imagine everybody who's not in their bubble is just envious and wants to be in their bubble. Okay, academia is a similar similar problem, is that the people in there are all convinced this is the greatest life. This is, you know, but if you go there, you realize it's like awful. It's like awful how they treat each other and what they're pursuing. It's just they're pursuing vanity and nonsense. And how could they possibly? They're miserable, but they can't admit that to themselves. And they're very consumed about presenting the image to the world that they're happy and it's amazing. Okay, so it's not just academia. There is a phenomenon that's pretty broad and universal. Okay. How do we know we're not doing that? We're not doing that, of course not. Okay, good. We'll get to that later on in Mishnah. We'll get to that. Okay. Okay, good. Fine. Now, Tezayin. Okay, Pasuk Tezayin to Yudtes. Okay. So one more time, it's again the same thing. Mizimo tishmor alecha tunat nizreka, right? When chachma comes into your heart and you internalize it, the Torah is also going to protect you. The Torah will also guard and protect you. For what? L'hatzilcha me'isha zara. Okay, so it's going to save you from the exotic woman. Minachriya, like a foreigner. Amareha chalika, whose words are smooth. Okay? So Torah is going to save you from the smooth-talking, exotic, foreign, strange woman. Ha'ozevis aluf nureha, who abandons the aluf. Aluf is the, it's her husband, really. Okay. Her husband of her youth, her chief, her companion, her, you know, her baal, her husband. Bezbris eloheha shachecha. And the bris, the deal, the covenant that she made with her God, she's forgotten. Okay, so it's presenting her in a certain sense as she was a Jew, she was a Jewess who abandoned her people, and she abandoned her God. She abandoned Klal Yisrael and abandoned her God. Okay, and the Torah is going to protect you from her. She's a smooth, sweet talker. Okay. Kishacha el maves besa, because her house is declined towards death. Ve el rifayim magaloseha, and her paths are towards weak ones, weaklings. Her path is for weaklings. Kol ba'eha lo yeshuvun, all those who come to her will never return. They will never attain the path of life. Okay, they'll never attain the path of life. Okay, so that is this is the feminine heretic. Okay, I'm not sure if there's a, right? There's a, the feminine heretic, the Isha Zara. Okay, the Isha Zara, the strange woman, the exotic woman. Okay, and Torah is going to save you from her also. So again, we're going to try to analyze her and see what's what she's about, and then we'll try to explain how Torah saves you from her. Okay. So Rashi says like this on her. He says, Me'isha Zara, Kinesia Shelavoda Zara, Hi Aminos. So the Isha Zara is like the society of Avodah Zarah, which is also heresy. Okay. Okay, so it's we'll get that in a second. V'lo yitakin lomar shelo dibur el amina efes mamish. So he's saying you cannot possibly say that this is only talking about literally the adulteress, the Isha Zara, the woman, the you know, woman having an affair. So because what would be the great praise of Torah that it saves you from her? The whole the great shevach of Torah, the great praise of Torah is it saves you from adultery. That's what Torah saves you from. No other avera, just from this woman. Rather you must say it's not true, the pshat of the mashal is Isha Zara, adultery, and there is a pshat. Right? Remember Rashi and Paragav said you can't forget about the pshat, but it's Rashi is arguing that it's clear from the fact that the context, that this is the great shevach of Torah, how amazing Torah is. Right? This is part of the, in a sense, the argument of Shlomo's like weaving in these arguments into the greater picture. This is within the, before this, we did last week, and what we'll do next week is about the Shevach of Torah, how amazing Torah is, how it's great. So he's interweaving one of the greatness of Torah is it's protecting you from this woman, okay, from this woman. So he's saying if it's protecting you from this woman, it can't just be, it's just this one avera of niyaf, of adultery. It's got to be minus. V'zu avodah zarah, she prikas all kol mitzvos. So it's minus in avodah zarah, which is the removing the yoke of all the mitzvos, okay? So the Shevach of Torah is it protects you from heresy, from avodah zarah, from the a life of total abandon of the Derech HaTorah. But if it's just adultery, okay, it's an avera. It's an avera, but it's not the end of the world. But minos and avodah zarah, that's kofir b'kol Torah kula, and that's what this is saving you from. Torah is saving you from that. Okay. Now, what does the Rashi say of? Okay, it's a good argument from Rashi. Okay, I mean, look, you may have said that adultery is a pretty bad avera, but Rashi's saying, okay, not the same as avodah zarah minas, not the same. Okay, so what does he mean, kinesia shel avodah zarah? So I think that there's really, like we said, the male heretic, the ish medaber tepuchos, that's the pseudo-intellectual heretic who convinces you through rational arguments and tries to present to you this group of intellectuals who argue with you that their way of life is better than your way of life, and they take a bad way of life and make it good, and make you take a good way of life and make it bad, and through their sophistry, that's the male heretic. But the female heretic is not using intellectual, rational arguments in order to convince you to leave the Torah. She's trying to draw you to avodah zarah, draw you away from Torah and to meanness and heresy through your instincts and your desires, through trying to attract you, your emotions. And there's, I would say, at least two main components to that. There's the general society of avodah zarah. So the heretical society, it has a lot of things that present as like attractive, of like if you give up the Torah, you can lead this way of life of the pursuit, you know, the single life, on go out on town and the clubbing and the drinking and the drugs and the women and you know, all that, the college atmosphere, the fraternity houses and the parties and you know, and the avodah zarah back in the day, avodah zarah, it's all catering to a person's taivas. So it's one of the ways that the minim will try to attract you, and or the attraction that minas has on a person. It's not simply because the intellectual arguments, but it's the whole way of life that the minim present to you. It's like something that's much more appealing to your instincts. You don't have to worry about kosher food. You could eat anywhere you want. You could have shrimp. You can have pork. You can have cheeseburgers. It's the it's the food and the alcohol and the sex and the drugs and the parties and the friends and it's the pomp and these religions they build these massive these temples which attract especially Jew living in Galus. It's just you see these the ceremonies and the pomp, and it just seems like there's something very, very important happening in these Avodah Zarah places and they're basically something that's designed to attract you. That why am I keeping this Torah? Why am I doing this with all these restrictions in this way of life? That way of life seems so much more fulfilling. But it's trying to do it not through intellectual arguments, but drawing on your instincts and your taivas and your emotions. That's the Knesset Shel Avodah Zarah, and that's part of the draw of heresy. Why Jews leave the Torah and abandon the Torah? They want to join non-Jewish society because it seems much more appealing to their instincts, to their emotions, and they want to be part of that. And that's the Isha Zara. In addition, I would say there is an intellectual taiva that a Jew has, or a person has, is to pursue areas of knowledge that are really beyond them, that are different, that are new, just to study other religions, to study the Bible critics, to see what they have to say. These are different and they're new and they're forbidden, the things that we're not supposed to read. Torah says, Al tifnu alim, you're not really allowed to learn these guys. You can't really learn Bible critics. It's asur because of this reason. They distort a person. We'll get into why it's asur. But it's forbidden, and Mayim Genuvim Yuntaku, we'll come to that later on in Mishnah. So there's an allure and there's a draw intellectually to investigate these areas to see what they're like. And there's something exciting about forbidden knowledge, about knowledge that you're not allowed to pursue. What's more exciting than the forbidden knowledge and something new and different, that new perspective that you haven't seen before, that nobody's telling you about? So the Isha Zara, it's all the emotional, instinctual draw that heresy and Avodah Zarah, apikorsis, exerts on a person and draws them. And that's the kinesia of Avodah Zarah. That's the allure and the excitement that Avodah Zarah and heresy, exerts on the person. And I would say, again, in the college campuses, it's the combination of these two. It's the one is, yes, you get these people who will argue with you and try to break you down. And if you don't know how to defend the Torah, it's going to seem like you're really broken down by these smart people who have these arguments that you can't answer. And that's one thing. And the other thing is just the attraction to that whole way of life of being Purik Omachu Shemayim and removing it and acting like a guy and being part of their society and their fraternity houses and things like that. And you know, arguably, which is the more dangerous one? They work together. They combine. It's a 1-2 punch. And those two factors come together and they really will destroy. They really will destroy the unprepared, the Nar and the Pesi, who has not really internalized the message of Torah and Chachma and isn't really able to defend himself against these two heretics. Okay. Before we get into how Torah saves you from her, let's deal with Psukim. So Tezayin is saying that it's Mareha Chalika. So she's a smooth talker, which means that she knows how to speak to your emotions. Okay, that it's designed to appeal to your emotions. Okay, that's the element of a smooth talker. You know, it's exactly the words to say to get you interested in following after her, the Isha Zara. She knows what to say to you. Okay, and Pesuk Yud-Zayin is an interesting pasuk here. It seems to me that it's presenting the Isha Zara in particular as a Jew, as coming from a Jew who left the Torah. Left the way of the Torah, and they're the ones in particular who are, once a Jew goes from the path, then they're the ones who are trying to get others to go with them, to bring them. And they're presenting it, this new way of life, as something really good and really exciting. Okay, and then she has they have no loyalty to their nation. You know, they used to be Jews, and I guess they still are technically, but they used to be Jews, and they have no loyalty to God and to Jews and to Aluf Nuraha, they're and Bris Eloheha Shachecha. It's her God and it's just her people. And there's basically, once they abandon it, it's like total betrayal and there's no sense of loyalty to God or to the Jewish people. And now they become seductresses who's whose existence is dedicated to getting other people to other Jews to follow in their way of life. Okay. And now Yud Ches and Yud Tes are really critical psukim. That Kishacha Mavis Besa. Rashi says, Shachu Machlik B'Madron HaDerech HaMavis. So her path, when you start going into her house, there's like a decline to death. It's like you're on a treadmill to hell. Okay, it's not just like a straight path, but as you go in, there's like a slow decline, and you don't even realize what's happening. That as you start going there, and you're curious, you're a little bit attracted, so you want to go in there. You step inside her house a little bit. But slowly but surely, somehow you just keep getting further and further. It's like there's a momentum, there's a decline, that her path is not one that you just stay on and whatever. You can go forward, you can go back. You're slowly going further and further in and further down. Okay. Okay, I'm going to skip that part. The Torah Tishmar Lechem Nefilazu, Hari Davar Gadol Hulach. How the Torah is going to protect you. So, what does he say? Refayim. Nir Pimi Derech Tova, V'nezvim Ein Somech, Ad Noflim B'Gehenem. So, she particularly prays on people who are weak. Refayim. They're weak, Mi Derech Tova, and V'nezvim Ein Somech. That this woman, the Isha Zara, she prays on people who are weak, where they don't have a strong grasp on the Derech of Tova, on the Derech of Torah, where they're not really committed to Torah and mitzvos fully. They're not really fully engaged. And they're Nezavim and Somech, they don't have like a social safety network. That's why, again, I go back to these, when kids go to these secular college campuses, it's like they didn't really have a great education, Torah education. They went through, yes, maybe they went through the modern Orthodox day school system, or even the high schools. But has it really penetrated their souls of why Torah is good and why Chacham is so important? They walk out of there hating learning. You know what I mean? They don't appreciate Gemara. They don't appreciate Mishlei. They don't appreciate why the Torah really is the best way of life at all. They don't value Chacham at all. And so they're near Pimi Derech Tova. They feel Torah, whatever. I guess this is what I used to do. And they have Ein Somech. They don't have a social network. Now, a person stays at home for college. They have their friends and their family. They're part of an Orthodox community. Those people are hard targets for the Isha Zara. She doesn't go after them. Do you know what I mean? They go after the Jews who are isolated, who go out into the secular world. And they don't really have the social connections, the social network to protect them, to keep them engaged in a Orthodox community. Those people are her targets. And she specifically goes after them, because they're easy prey. And once she gets her hands on them, as soon as she gets them a little bit and they take a step forward and they go there, it's just a decline. It's just a treadmill to hell. And once you call the Ahal Lo Yeshuvon, once you go in there, there is a point of no return. There is a point where once you go over to her side and you follow in her path, there is a point where you cannot get back. You cross the horizon. It's like a black hole where there is, you're not going to notice when you cross the horizon of a black hole. Nothing's changed. The horizon it's in a certain sense, it's an imaginary, it's not imaginary, it's a real point in space, but it's not a physical, nothing physically changes. You're completely unaware you've crossed the horizon of a black hole. Same thing here. You're completely unaware you've crossed into this point, the horizon of the Isha Zara, but there's a point where you go where there's absolutely no way to get out. There's no way to extract yourself from her way of life. At that point, you're not completely, you don't feel like you've completely gone, you've completely abandoned Torah, but there's no way for the person to really extract themselves again outside of her grasp. And it's just a matter of time until the person gives up the Torah entirely and is Ad Shenofel B'Gehenem. There's no Chelek in Olam Haba for that person. Basically just ends up giving up Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. It's Mavis and Olam Hazeh and it's Gehenem and Olam Haba. And that's the attraction of the woman. She's just got to get you into the house, taking a few steps forward. And then there's a momentum and there's no way there comes a point where there's simply no return. And that's why essentially how does the Torah save you from her? So it does so in three ways. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
But why is it impossible to go back?
That's a really, you know, to develop that point deeper, what happens? You know, I think it's like there is the excitement that it exercises on your imagination and on your emotions. It like will forever haunts the person. It's certainly impossible to ever get a good way of life, because that fantasy and illusion is always out there, always in the back of a person's mind. There's like no way for a person to ever get her out of his mind completely. The doubts that the Ish Medaber Tepucho sows in the back of your mind, it's just always there, always lingers, you know, that it's because these are like, they're not the whole issue of the goodness of Torah, the truth of Torah. It's the same thing as with anything else, the truth of any system and the goodness of any system. These are not black and white mathematical proofs. They're subject to intuitions. The very your emotions and being in line with them are very important here. And once your emotions get caught up in that other way of life and your mind gets poisoned with doubts, you never really are able to fully extricate yourself from them in general. I would say not just, it seems like an absolute sense that these things are never really, I think the reason on a fundamental level is because it's not black and white. These things are not black and white. It's subject to intuition, and your intuition is affected by your emotions. And the emotional attraction and the desires that you create by engaging in that way of life never really go away. They never fully go away. And they will exert a pull on you for the rest of your life. You can try, like the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which brings this Kobayel Yeshuvun, where you seek Orchos Chaim, basically that's impossible to ever really do tshuva for people. I think it asks the Gemara, maybe it's Yed Zayin Amud Aleph. I think it asks the question that, but there was this one woman who did, and the Gemara says, yeah, but she died from, ultimately she maybe did do tshuva, but she never was able to have a good way of life again. You know, so it might not mean, and this is, a theme that's going to be developed. Like, what does it really mean, the point of no return? where is that point of no return? Based on the Rambam in Perek Beis of Odes Kochavim, it's not where just like a person reads a book a little bit. It's where a person does like a Maisa L'Hachas. Do you know what I mean? Where they specifically do an Aveira just totally against the Torah, like specifically, you know, Mechallel Shabbos for no other reason, just do Mechallel Shabbos, or eating on kosher just to show that they're eating on kosher, you know, where they really do a Maisa L'Hachas, B'yad Rama, B'Shap Nefesh. Now, that's what I'd say from the Rambam. But where exactly that point of no return is I don't know. But it's like a whole psychological overthrow of the Torah. It's like a person abandons God, betrays the Torah. Maybe it's just like he can never have that. He has a feelings of shame and guilt. Once he abandons the Torah, how could he ever go back to it? The guilt and the shame are too painful for what he did, the betrayal that he did. He'd rather just live the illusion that no, that was really right, abandoning the Torah. What I'm doing now is a good thing. You know what I mean? It's you know, in a certain sense, it's you know, the people who abandon the Torah think it takes tremendous courage to abandon the Torah, to abandon how they were raised. Yeah, but way more courage is necessary to admit you made a mistake in doing something like that and to come back. And most people do not have that courage and those emotional reserves to really do something like that. It's I don't know. The answer to your question is deeper and there's more, and to some degree we're going to be discussing that over the coming weeks, but it is a critical pasuk, Kobel Yeshuvun, that for the person who goes in there and is unprepared, he doesn't come back out. You don't come back out of this thing. It's not something that you can fall into and extricate yourself from. There is a point where it's too late.
And are you learning this on both via the Isha and the Isha,
or just the Isha? I mean, this pasuk is speaking about the Isha in particular, but it's speaking about Minas in general. I think, yeah, I think it's both. I do think it's going on both, but I don't have a raya for that. From simple pshat in the pasuk, it's referring to the Isha Zara herself, but it's referring to Kfira and Minas and heresy as a whole. So I think it's both the intellectual and the emotional thing. Once you get in too far, you're not coming back. It's a slow decline to Maves and to Gehenna, and there really is no coming back. Where that point is a good discussion, and how a person can get himself out. And even when you cross that, is there something you can do, maybe not fully do tshuva, but some partial tshuva? That's something we're going to deal with in the coming chapters. But like on the most basic pshat level, there is the point of no return where you really can't come back. There's a point where you can't come back. That is an important idea, and it really one of the points that Mishlei tries to hammer home over and over again is that you should not be overconfident in your ability to sample these things and to go near them. Don't be so confident. You're going to go to these, you know, secular colleges. You're going to read these books about, you know, Bible criticisms, or you're going to engage in, you know, secular culture and things like that. And whatever, you'll just dabble in it a little bit. You'll read it. You ask a few questions. You'll investigate. You're curious. And then you think it's not going to poison your mind. These things poison your mind. They poison your soul. You don't come back from them. You're not able to. And even if you do come back, it ruins your life. You're not able to enjoy Torah the same way. A big part of Torah is Torah is an enjoyable, good way of life. It's these things, even if you do abandon them because you realize the minas is really stupid and it's bad and it's harmful and the people are bad, even if you're able to come back for the Torah, it will poison your ability to ever have a happy future. The Orchos Chaim are no longer really available to the person who goes with this follows the woman down her path. Even if you come back, it's not the same way of life. You can't really enjoy the good way of Torah anymore. There's a certain poison that enters your soul that never is able to really be extricated. And, you know, and the solution really is to avoid her entirely. That's the main, you know, that's, you know, taking off on that. That's the three ways that Torah has of saving you from her is number one is, and first and foremost, is the Torah warns you about her. It warns you about him, the Ishmedaber Tepukos. And its primary message is Al Tifnu Alilim, Lo Sesirach Elevavchem Acharneichem, is don't engage with these people, is realize the danger and the harm that they can have for you, how they're tricky and they're seductive. And, you know, you got to be this unbelievable chacham in order to really be protected from these people. And so just, and the real chacham doesn't engage with these people. He understands how harmful and dangerous they are, and he doesn't go after them. It's like a person's, he's going to, just a shot. What's a person going to do? He's going to go to the whorehouse. He's going to go in, look around, say hi, whatever. They're pretty things to see. And then he's going to walk out. You're not going to be able to do that. The Chacham realizes that it engages your emotions and you're going to be overcome by your taibos. So you're not going to be able to get yourself out of there. The Chacham realizes don't go to the whorehouse. You know, that's the primary message of Torah, how it saves you, is it warns you to avoid these books, avoid these campuses, these college campuses, avoid these journals. And, you know, these TV shows, whatever, don't engage with them and go the other way. I'll take Rav Pesach Pesa. Don't go near the door of her house. Okay, that's number one. Number two is Chachma and Torah helps you see why she's bad, why she's evil. It's not just saying avoid her, but it's superficially, she seems beautiful, she seems attractive, very desirable. But if you have Chachma, you can see in a deeper level, you can see her corruption now. It's a twisted way of life, and she's not pulling you to a good place. She's pulling you to your own destruction, to giving up your life in this world and the next world. But if you don't have wisdom, you don't have Torah, you can't really, and you need deep wisdom and understanding, then you don't really see through why her way of life is harmful and destructive. So Torah tells you to avoid her, but then it also will help you see and analyze her and see what is wrong with her, what's so corrupt and evil and distorted about her. But and you need wisdom and understanding and knowledge to be able to do that. Just having a superficial idea of mitzvos is not going to protect you from her. And thirdly, this is something, again, I don't think is in these psukim, but is one of the ways she gets you is the person feels lonely, feels that he has no meaning in life. He's not grounded. You know, these people, again, and people go through a modern Orthodox education, but they don't feel a commitment to Torah. They don't feel a relationship with Torah. Torah is not a personality. It's not a real thing for them. So then they're you know, open, it's open game on them. Then they're easy. They're looking for something. And then this presents them with a meaning and a place in life. They can be part of the society, the non-Jewish culture with this, the join a fraternity. They can be part of the, you know, this, this, you know, band of academics or whatever it is. They feel like they have a place. So, but Torah protects you from that because Torah gives you a place and a meaning and a purpose in this world. And you don't need, if you can be satisfied with the Torah, you don't need, if you could be satisfied, you could appreciate the Torah by seeing the depth and the beauty of ideas and the Derech HaChaim of Torah, that itself is the best guard for the guy for going to the whorehouse is the fact that he has a satisfied life with his wife. You know, the person who doesn't feel any connection to his wife, he's the one who's most open and subject to being preyed upon by this woman, the seductress who comes to him because he's not satisfied. And it's very easy pickings for her to go after him. So that's the three ways I would say Torah protects you. One is it warns you about an advance to avoid her. Two is it helps you see through the external facade of the Isha Zara and the Ish Medaber Tepuchos. And third is it gives you a satisfying relationship with the Torah, which helps you not feel the need to go be pursuing something else. Okay. That's the Isha Zara. Okay. Any questions on her?
And these can you just read the second way it saves you?
The second way is she's you have to use chachma to see through her lies. You know what I mean? She's putting on this facade of you know, it's a superficial attractiveness. You got the makeup and the perfume and the clothes, but you know what I mean? And that's the external. She looks beautiful and attractive and desirous, but you don't see the corruption that's at her core and the destruction that lays in wait if you go too far into her house. And chachma and tfuna and das, that's what allows you to see that. And if you're just an uneducated, ignorant, good little Jew, and then you're not gonna be able to. It's, she seems attractive. It seems great. What's wrong with it? Let me just see what's going on there. You know, but if you don't know, you have to be able to penetrate the evil that lies in her heart. You have to have wisdom and knowledge to really be able to see what's wrong with her. Okay, and that's something that requires real deep wisdom. It's not so easy. It's not so simple. I can't just, you really have to analyze it. And I'm speaking in general terms, but you really have to analyze, and you're allowed to. You're allowed to study this in order to see the evil, in order to show people what's wrong with it and to distort it. That's the only heter to really engage it, to learn it, to break it down and to see what's wrong and corrupt about the Ovdei Avodah Zarah and the Minim. But it requires a real analysis. It's not something that a person who's not trained in Torah and thinking and methodology and Gemara and learning and logic is something, not something that should be attempted by a novice. It's something that if you try to do and you don't know, you're going to get drawn in and you'll be destroyed. And there's no way out. No way out. You know, I'm dramatizing a little bit, but that's what Mishle is doing. You know what I mean? It's important. You want to get that message across that this is a dangerous, you're risking your entire life, your entire existence by following, listening to these people. Okay. Listening to these people, it's, you're risking it all. Okay, and it's not something that you can just go and come back. That's not that kind of a thing. It's like the gang. Remember the gang? It's the gang is these guys. Is they tell you, listen, if you want, you could be in with us, or you just after you kill the one person, you get the money, whatever, we'll split up, we'll each go our own way. They present it to you like it's a one-off, but it's not a one-off. You're in there forever. You know, once you join the gang, there's no way out of the gang. That's these guys. They're trying to get you to join them, to be part of them, but once you're there, there's no way out. Okay, it's like the mafia. It's that's it. You're a member for life. You don't realize that's what's happening, but that's what's happening. Kobayala Yeshuvim. There's no coming back from this kind of decision. It's not a decision. It's not reversible. It's an irreversible decision.
All right, Zimmer.
Yeah.
If this woman is formerly a Jew, why is she described as being a Zara and a Nachria?
Because she's bringing you to Avodah Zarah. She was formerly a Jew, but now she's gone to the other side and she's espousing foreign ideas and, you know, different values and a different culture and a different way of life and, you know, different ethics. So she's her words and her way of life is she's joined the other side. She's no longer a Jew. She's abandoned. She's betrayed her people, and now she's trying to attack them and to get other people to join her and to leave the Jewish nation and leave God to be with her, abandon Torah and to go with her. Mm-hmm. She's not familiar. She's no longer a Jewess living the life of a Jew. She's become something other, and her life is about heresy now, and it's about getting other people to join her. It's real. These people are real there. They're sick people. They really, they've, once they abandon the Torah, they have this mission to get other people to join the Torah, to abandon the Torah also. It's a sickness. They betrayed the Jewish people, and they betrayed the Torah, and they're going to get other Jews to do it too. And they're going to distort the Torah, and they're going to criticize the Torah, and they go after people. You get a nice little good Jew who's out on his own, away from his social network, who didn't really have a great education. The Torah hasn't really penetrated him. The idea that Torah is really good is kind of like a fluffy idea in his mind. He doesn't really know how to defend the Torah, and he's like perfectly ripe for being attacked by these people, and they go after these people, and they go after these Jews. These people are going to go after Jews, and they're going to try to poison them, and they're good. They're professionals. They're smooth, and they go after Jews, and they're successful. They're very successful, unfortunately.
In universities, like, a lot of the people that go after Jews are also non-Jews, so like Christians. And so I was wondering if there's like a difference between where the person comes from.
Definitely. Like the Ish Medaber Tepuchos, there's no indication that he was a Jew. And in general, I would say that it doesn't have to be the person was a Jew. Oftentimes, it's not. Oftentimes, it's just somebody who hates Jews, hates religion, hates the Torah, things like that. And it could be a non-Jew. It's just, probably the worst are the ones who are Jews who abandon the Torah. Those, I think, are the worst of them all. But definitely, it could easily be Christians or, in our days, honestly, I don't know if it's as much Christians as much as secular, secular atheists. It's probably more often in the modern era than Christians. You know, in the medieval times, it was much more Christians who were trying to get Jews to convert by these arguments against the Gemara and Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah, or the allure of joining Christian society and being able to get positions in government and positions in teaching, things like that, that only could be given to Christians. But in the modern era, it's I would say much more secular atheists that are these Minim and Kofim. But I don't think it has to specifically be Jews who abandon the Torah. It could easily be non-Jews and secular atheists who are just hate religion and hate Jews and are trying to destroy Torah, just get rid of, get rid of God. They take the greatest thing in the world, they make it evil, and they take the whole evil way of life of theirs and they make it good. And they're good about it. They're smart. They know what they're saying. They're good at what they do. They're not good people, but they're good at what they do. They're professionals, and you got to be careful for these people. Okay. Okay. The last little section here. Okay. Leman. So again, Rashi says, Leman Telech. Again, Musa Mikr Shamal. Lehatzil Chamiderech Ra. Leman Halicha Bederech Tovim. So the purpose of internalizing Torah and Torah protecting you, Mizima Tishmalecha, protecting you from these heresies. Why is the Torah protecting you? What is the Torah doing this for? Leman Telech Bederech Tovim, in order to give you, put you on the path of good people, the path, the good way. Varcha Sadikim Tishmor, it's trying to preserve you for the righteous, just way of life. Ki Yisharim Yishkinu Aretz, because honest people, right, proper people, they're going to dwell in the land. V'tmimim Yivasriba, and perfected people will remain there. Right, Rashi says, Ki Yisharim Yishkinu Aretz, L'olam Abba, and perfected people, Yivasriba, Kishi Yedu Shem Gehenim. Right, so in Olam Abba, basically, is you're going to have Tzadikim, you're going to have Yesharim, and Rishayim Me'aretz Yikareisu, Pesach HaBeis. But from Aretz here means Olam Abba. From Olam Abba, wicked people are Rishayim are cut off, Ubodim Yischu Meno, and people who betray the Torah are completely uprooted from it. Okay. And basically, the point here is internalizing wisdom and Chachma, and the protecting you, the Torah protecting you from heresy and kfira. The purpose of it is to give you a good life. It's to give you a good life in this world, and in order to give you chelek olam haba, to give you a permanent true existence. And in olam haba, Allah buzz for tzaddikim, people who are ethical, who are perfected, really just way of life, a proper way of life. who aren't consumed by taiva, who don't distort the truth. And Torah is trying to put you on a good life. That's what Torah is trying to do. That's what Chachma is trying to do. And these people who betray the Torah, the people who are trying to get you to join the way, these are the Rishayim who are basically their life in this world is mavas, and their Olam Haba is gone. They're going to Gehenna. They're on a path to Gehenna. And Torah is the purpose of the Torah saving you from them is not just to save you from them. It's because the Torah has something good in store for you. It's trying to give you a good life in this world and trying to give you a true ultimate existence in the world to come, which these people are trying to take you away from. Okay. That's basically the message here, Latzilcha, of who the Torah is protecting you from and what the Torah is trying to save you for. What's the purpose of the Torah saving you? For the good life in this world and Olam Haba. That's basically it. Any questions on the overall, on these psukim or the overall ideas here?
I'm just wondering, does it matter where the person starts off? Like if the person starts off religious or and then he abandons the Torah, or maybe if he starts off he just doesn't have any Torah and he gets on this wrong path?
Well, your question is whether there's a difference if a person was religious and abandoned the Torah, or if the person wasn't so religious to begin with. Was that your question?
Yeah, like where it starts off?
Yes, I mean, there is a difference. I'm not sure if it's from here. The person who's religious, who abandons the Torah, that's the Mishnah in Chagiga. Maybe it's Chasam and Aleph of, or Tassam and Aleph, of Mu'uvas lo yuchel iskon, another pasuk in Mishnah. There are certain things like that's crooked that can't be fixed. The Mishnah says there, it's like the Talmud Chacham Shapirish, that there's something that was straight originally and then it became crooked. So that's lo yuchel iskon, that it can never come back from. So, I mean, the person who like once was religious and then he abandons the Torah because he's been fooled by the Ish Medaber Tepuchos or seduced by the Ish Azara. So that person really is no coming back, because that person has like seen Chachma to some degree, and he can no longer have that insight that can protect him, that can bring him back. But like the person who's never really, was never really religious, I think the implication from that Mishnah is that it's possible that there's a way out for them. But from these psukim, again, you know, like a lot of the subtleties will be developed over the coming weeks. So I do think it's much worse for the person who was religious and abandons the Torah. For them, there's no real hope. You know, Talmud Chacham Shapirish, I shouldn't say a religious person, Talmud Chacham Shapirish for sure is done. Okay, a real Talmud Chacham who leaves the Torah, never coming back. That's never coming back. The person who is religious, who abandons the Torah, is almost definitely not coming back. Person who wasn't really religious gets caught up in this has a better chance. You know, the further the person was towards the Torah and when they abandoned it, the harder it is to ever come back. But again, in these psukim, that's not something that Mishle is developing. Right now, it's trying to warn you from the fact that there is this idea of no return. That's not so obvious. Not everything is irreversible. Not all paths you can't return from. And the one of the key ideas of Mishle is that Minas is one of those paths that doesn't allow, it's a path of no return. And that's what it's trying to convey. And therefore, that other point is Rashi's that Torah Tishmor Alechem and Nefilah Zu Harei Davar Gadol Hulach. Like once you appreciate what this destruction is, what these people are trying to do to you, and you realize the only thing that can really protect you is the Torah, that's just like another reason to realize how amazing the Torah is, how great Chachma is. The only really way to protect yourself is Torah and Chachma. And without that, you're basically lost. You have no hope. So it's just like another real reason is like how amazing Chachma is, that it can actually protect you from these people, you know? So, but the different degrees and who could really not come back and when could, that's something that I think we'll be developing over the course of the coming weeks a little bit. Yes.
Yeah, it seems to relate a little bit. I remember Rabbi Ginsburg gave share this week, Gemara about Tava Lobisha, in terms of Minas, whether someone could be choshed, you know, for minus, but if somebody was good to start with, so to say, and saw truth and reality, lobisha, you know, there's a presumption that they wouldn't be seduced, or they wouldn't be able to abandon it once they've actually seen it. If they were bad, or they started out with the wrong ideas, and then they saw some truth, it's possible that, you know, they could get, I guess, seduced the other way. But it would seem that it may or may not fit in a little bit to what's going on here, because you're not really talking about the Chacham steadfast in his ways, who's being exposed to it. Dafka, it's somebody who's still impressionable,
yeah,
and hasn't fully seen it yet.
Yes, no, you're right. I'm getting ahead of myself. These psukim are definitely geared towards the Nar and the Pasi, the one who hasn't really internalized Chachma. Other Rabbi is saying, if you internalize Chachma, Torah will protect you from this. Torah will protect you from this. You don't have to, you know, you're not going to get caught up in this. You'll know to avoid them. If somehow you come into contact with them, you know, Torah puts you on the straight path, the highway to a good existence. It's a nice broad path with trees and light. It's warm. It's wonderful. And on the side of the road, you see these little paths with the Isha Zara trying to get you to come over to her, and the Ish Medarat Tepuchos trying to get you to come to his path. And like, you know, it seems like these side paths are interesting and exciting, but Chachma will tell you, stick on the middle path. Don't leave the Derech HaTorah, the straight, you know, the King's Highway. Stay there. Don't abandon these people. And it's really speaking to somebody who's the Nar and the Pasi, who doesn't really have Chachma and doesn't appreciate the good path. They refine the Rephaim who are weak, don't really appreciate that they're on a good, they don't really appreciate that why Torah is so good. And they're, you know, and they're not connected socially to Torah and to other Orthodox Jews. Those are the people who are really fall prey to these people. For sure, that's definitely in this parsha, this section of Mishlei, it's definitely speaking to them. You're right. And to discuss really what happens when the Chatam HaChacham Shapirish, that's not quite from here. From this parak in Mishlei, you get the impression that Talmud Chacham can't be Pirish. Torah is going to protect him. You know, it's so, you know, you have to, again, it's a book. It's 10 chapters. It develops. It develops over time. So not every subtlety can be borne out in every section. So I'm just getting ahead of myself a little bit. The main point here is that Chachma will protect you from these people. And if you don't have Chachma, you're going to get, you're really easy prey, and they're coming for you. Okay.